Ed. Ed. Ed.
You wanna quit, Ethan?
All he had ever wanted was home.
That'll be the day.
Serenade.
We sort of started going out. I'm really not sure whether I should have fallen for this one or not. Ed insisted that he take me to see the Wild Bunch.
Oh, yes.
But what I didn't expect was that he would dress up as a cowboy. He had the boots and he had the hat and he had this checkered jacket. I should have guessed something was up.
Yeah,
right. Anyway. He used to write to me every Sunday. Those were the days when there was still a Sunday post. And every Monday morning, I'd have a letter. And in one of these letters was, I think I'm onto something. Graham Griffiths has invited me to set up a jazz section at All Change. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, I think I'm really onto something, you know. Graham made an approach to Edward and said, look, can I come in with you? I agreed to marry Edward. And we sat around the table for the first time, the three of us,
yeah.
As men might do. Maybe Graham and Ed kind of shook hands and said, right, let's do this together. And my nickname for Edward was Mole.
I see.
So I just said, Mole Jazz.
Right.
And that's how Mole Jazz was born.
Right.
I still remember that white formica habitat table that we sat around, Edward's records all banked up behind.
Mm. So he had a huge collection even then.
Well, it was pretty big. When I picture now these three men, I think of Ed's favourite films and the camaraderie between men.
Free association with Raging Bull. Yellow Canary shoots E. Pistoleri. Shoot. Opening bars. By the pool. Picked up. Serenade. Then fuck. Walk down aisle. The usual beat. Usual tweet. Exchange of rings. Choke on the vow. Blonde holy cow breeds. Rare steak fed for lunch. Dance then punch. Freeze. Fist thrust deep into basin of ice. Womb numbed life, licked into shape. Tongue tied, gloved sacrifice. Splice. Bob is Jake, is Brando, is me. Mirrored iconography. On the rocks, neat blood speech, liquid peace. Credits. My life is starring me. Laughter. Mother to daughter.
I think it became a social occasion. People would go down there and there'd be all sorts of get-togethers.
That's how I saw it. It was a kind of entrepot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I knew about Mole Jazz, but I think Ed had approached me on a gig.
Right.
And at the time I had already had an idea of recording. And we became, well, I suppose we could say instantly friendly.
He loved your playing.
Yes, I know he did.
And
it was during that period that he said to me, I think we'd gone to a cafe for a cup of tea and a sticky bun, which we can't get down here.
And
a
pity.
I know. And he said he'd been diagnosed with his cancer. And I was quite shocked, and it wasn't too long after that. I don't have to tell you that Ed was seriously ill and passed away. Cup of tea and whatever. And he said, when I pass away, would you play at my service? I said, yeah, of course I will. But I was terribly emotional, you know, because it all came as a big shock to me. I suddenly thought, hang on a minute, I've just met the fella. You know how life is, that you think, I said, yes, I'd be delighted, it will await for me, and that's how it worked out. After that, I suppose I swanned off somewhere else and carried on doing other things. But I did know of the existence of Mole Jazz through Spike Wells, who's a fantastic collector, the drummer Spike Wells, and who's, as you know, I don't know if you know, Spike is an Anglican priest.
I do, I was at his ordination.
Oh, there you are.
Our turning back don't mean nothing. Not in the long run. She's alive. She's safe. For a while.
A lot to me, Mole Jazz, over the years.
So I didn't know that you used to bid on the auctions.
Yeah. Ed was marvellous because if he knew you and liked you and trusted you, he used to let you go down to his lair
in the
basement
That's
of
right.
the shop, and you could look and see all these rare LPs which were going to be appearing on the auction list. He was also very keen on westerns. The Searchers was one of his favourite films.
Yeah.
I knew he loved it.
Yeah, he did. In a way, he kind of identified with the character Ethan.
Oh.
A sonnet for the Searchers. Deaf to one another's body talk, our heart speech projected outwards onto our walls. Mine in the choice of wallpaper, their designs a backdrop, a bold feminine prop to all our family rituals. Yours spoke through video and the silent sleeves of your ranked LPs, accumulating. I never got to know the little boy with golden curls in the Krikyeth photo. What he became, I only met in death. The cowboy swagger stopped. The mask dropped to reveal your true one, suddenly composed out of strife. The nurses said it was Christ-like.
Was he always very overweight?
Yeah,
when you first met him?
Yeah, he was huge when I first met him. And then he lost 10 stone when
How
he was courting me.
How did that start? Do you know?
Yeah, well, I'm sure this started with the death of his siblings.
Can I just stop you a minute? Ellie, come sit down. Don't, you know. Are you?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I just didn't want you to be sort of hanging around, you know.
Don't feel... Edward was born in 43, His sister was born in 46 and died in the same year. I had a kind of a flashback when I saw the beginning of the searchers and the Comanche warrior standing over the tombstone of the grandmother and the little girl who is going to be abducted, Debbie. It's a very powerful shot. There's the tombstone, and then there's a shadow of Scar over the tombstone, and then it switches to the little girl. Edward was haunted by the death of his little sister.
Right.
Haunted because the Welsh family didn't want Edward's mum and Edward to leave the family home in Crickieth. Edward's dad came back from the war to claim his family.
Big man coming down.
Edward had a dreadful nightmare when he was unwell. When his last buying expedition in the United States, I had to go down, and he was taken off the plane on one of those little kind of trolley things and told me about this dreadful nightmare about his sister, Susan. He always had dreams of throwing her out the window. And there's something very, very moving about what happened. There was an ambiguity. Somehow Edward was made to feel he was witness to something unsavoury, and there was some guilt was projected onto him, and that's why he became a fat little boy.
That caused him to eat.
To eat. I mean, yes. He was, yes. You know. In a way, I think this is one of the most... So this has been why it's taken me 14 years to reread your address at the funeral, and
I recognise my writing.
Yes, that's what it is.
Oh gosh, could I have a
course? Read it? Of course, you can.
I haven't seen it since.
Of course, you can.
Thank you. Carry on.
That my daughters and I got caught up in a drama. Someone else's story, which I just wish that the Welsh family had the courage to speak more openly with Edward about what happened. I think Edward needed to become that kind of a cowboy, take on that role as a way of somehow... It was like he was slipping into an unconscious replaying over and over again of this drama that he'd witnessed. He was pleading with his auntie and uncle when they came to visit him, saying, "What happened? You know, what happened?" And I was down the garden. Finally, Auntie Joan disclosed what happened. And that was...
Yeah.
Explosion. Ed was three when his dad came back from the war to find his wife and baby Susan living in Wales with his in-laws. Susan was born with a hole in the heart. I think she was quite a sickly baby. Incredibly, for some reason, his in-laws didn't seem to want to hand her over. And Tom's wife, Sarah, felt she had to choose between staying with the children and her parents or going away with her husband, but leaving her daughter behind. She decided to leave without her daughter. And sadly, within months, Susan died of her illness. That's what Auntie Joan told me in the garden.
Thank you.
1965 to 75, I was a rather hopeless drug addict on heroin, cocaine, and barbiturates.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Didn't you?
No, I didn't.
Ah, right. People remember Mole Jazz. People have got their whole collection is from Mole Jazz.
Yeah, that's right. I made a lot of cups of tea for those people, I can tell you. A lot of cups of tea. I used to put a lot of bleach down the loo. All those men, sweaty men. Oh, I remember that.
Yeah,
I didn't
absolutely.
Mind. I used to help out sometimes.
Yeah.
And my little Sean used to go in sometimes.
Yeah.
And she used to do colouring and things like that. And
Ethan. We've seen scalps before. Chief Scar. This before? Ethan. I came to trade, not to admire his collection. Tell him we'll pitch camp the other side of the creek. Talk tomorrow.
Are you a femme fatale or a good guy?
I can be both. For sure. So, hello, Graham, and remember Ackerman?
I remember Mr. Ackerman, yes. I don't think I ever witnessed him taking his false teeth out. I think he used to go down into Ed. He's one of Ed's special contacts and would bring over LPs to swap with Ed.
He was a forester or something. He lived in a forest.
If the internet had existed then, how much easier it would have been to communicate with people and records in now, but on the other hand, the internet has now really killed off that whole thing because eBay came along.
Yeah.
I guess only you saw his collection.
Yeah, I certainly saw it. I'm glad to have seen the back of it as well, I have to say.
When the shop was full, it was like being in a public convenience in the urinal where both sides were men lined up doing things with their hands which you wouldn't really want to know. Actually, flicking through piles and piles and piles of records.
That's a really good one.
If they had a wife, the wife was usually left outside the shop and probably went off shopping in the West End while they did their dirty deeds in King's Cross.
I've got a little something in here that I just like to read you that will make you laugh because it's an extract from a letter from... I don't think Hank Berkman ever came into the shop, but
it's a name I recognise.
Yeah, but you'll recognise the name. Yeah. He and Ed were also Marilyn Monroe fans, big time. Says Hank writes, "Men like Ed are special human beings, I think, because they provide the precious connections between individuals, whatever their often odd interests may be, and I am sure that you know what I'm talking about. I noticed how he held that double LP set of Charles Mingus in his hands, autographed, and which he had never seen a copy of. And at that moment, I knew he was one of us. And his teasing of vinyl freaks, just a friendly facade."
A very kind, generous person as well.
"I always felt you were very sympathetic to me, Graham. Yeah. I do remember having misgivings about Edward's collecting even then. I could never get him to switch off and be a dad."
I think Ed had a fairly vivid fantasy life, didn't he?
Very.
He created roles for himself. And I think he created, at that time, he wanted to have an honourable death. Mm.
Ethan. Engine will chase a thing till he thinks he's chased it enough. Then he quits. Same way when he runs. Seems like he never learns there's such a thing as a critter. That'll just keep coming on. So we'll find him in the end, I promise you. We'll find him.
I managed to get hold of a copy of a film which he hadn't seen. It was called Rogue Cop. And when I gave him the tape, I said, you know, enjoy. Wow, you know. And I remember he said to me, right, I shall take that home, and when I've had supper and done everything, I shall have a bath, and then I shall smoke a nice cigar and watch this. And I thought, yeah.
Yeah, I can understand that. I can relate to that. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, but I can relate to you as well, because it is a very private thing, yeah, which you can only share with fellow enthusiasts, I think. You know, my wife, Ellie, she lets me get on with it. I've got a projector and I've painted the wall white. You know, I just sit in there in my own fantasy world, identifying with the characters, I think.
Yes. Oh. And has it never occurred to you that Ellie and I might feel a little bit excluded when you light up your cigars and put your films on and settle back? Would you ever like us in to share?
Well, no, because, you see, if you were a character in one of these films, you'd be next door in the kitchen with an apron on doing the washing up, you see.
Sure.
You wouldn't be sitting in there with us.
Yeah, it is, but, you know...
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
You're a very special woman. I mean, I've seen your poetry. It's fantastic.
Anatomy of Loss. Christmas approaches and my body aches in all the places your jewellery used to touch. Illuminate those mineral initials chosen in my absence. Extravagant tokens bought to satisfy an ambiguous lust for ownership and self-esteem your flesh denied you. Where was I among the ranked collections? The unopened thrillers, cellophane CDs, the books of unstruck matches mapping the trade route of buying expeditions. From east to west your hands roamed, driven by a feeling eye. Its doomed naval ignition sparked a whole culture of collectors, plundering family purses, and which left me alone atop the Christmas tree, spectacled, peering through holes left by your missing stones, feeling for a magic wand, alive.
But you know that I'd actually separated from Ed.
Yes,
2 months before the diagnosis.
I remember that.
It was...
And then you came back.
And I came
because
back.
Because he was ill. Yes, I remember that.
Got to the point with the collecting, where there was no space for me in the house.
Yeah. Oh, it's a bit close to the knuckle, this. You know, I was married for 27 years. She didn't leave me because of my collecting specifically. In fact, her causa proxima was that she said she couldn't handle the fact that I was becoming a priest. But I know that my obsessions and my collecting and my wanting to watch films all the time, I think it did alienate her.
He could become 30 stone and ignore
not
the fact.
Notice.
And then just say to me, Lane, take me to see my records. At one point, he had such an ambiguous relationship with his own record collection, he put them in my mother's garage.
In order to separate himself from them,
yes.
Because he felt that...
Because he couldn't manage it.
He needed a break.
He couldn't manage it. And,
that's fascinating.
But then that's how I came to leave him, because then on a Sunday morning, he'd say to me, Lainey, drive me to the garage.
Because I've got to feel them.
Yeah.
So I've got to hug them.
Yeah, one day I was halfway there and I thought, why am I doing this? I can't do this anymore. And he stopped the car in the middle of the A1, whatever road it was, and said, "That's it, get out and walk."
Oh, God. Fascinating.
Put an amen to it.
Where are we, Nigel?
We're in the Modern Cafe, King's Cross, where the Mole Jazz staff used to come for their toast and marmalade, cups of tea in the morning, coffee. He used to come in the building in the morning and say, "Big man coming down." And he'd wander down the stairs and we'd be there for the day. Deb was always good fun to be around. He was courteous, occasionally irritable, but mostly very, very kindly, and had a lot of patience with a lot of the bizarre collectors who used to come in. What can I say? A lot of these shops are still the same. There's the African cosmetics shop. That's been there a very long time. That's still going.
I still see the mole playing a saxophone. And
it's been sitting empty ever since. And over the Mole Jazz sign, over half of the Mole Jazz sign, there's an ad for Wardrobe World. Our wardrobes are custom made to your measurement.
Seems like another life.
At the last, he set us to work on the collection. A lifetime of wants lined our walls. This vast vinyl bandage. His wealth. How many times had I sat on the sofa pleading health? Still colossal in his chair. He resisted. Blind. Until the tumour, like a worm in the bud, began to eat its way out and let the light in. Too late. My own colossus corralled. I knelt at his feet, our daughters beside me, obedient to his instructions. We graded and priced each disc during 3 whole weeks of his time remaining. All we had ever wanted was home. And home we had. Ethan, let's go home, Debbie.
Between the Ears, on saxophone, Bobby Wellens, drums, Spike Wells, Graham Griffiths, chorus, at the Modern Cafe, Nigel Scott. The reader was Annie Aldington, vocals and poems were by Lenny Dipple, and production was by Matt Thompson. Mole Jazz was a Loftus production for BBC Radio 3.